what you want. We've got a mob to all to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games, and you know we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too, and you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss between the bridges. We do some good interviews, and you know from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too? You love this podcast too.
Welcome into the latest Mountain West Connection podcast, football edition. We're going to make it through the offseason. We've made it. I think we're close. Jeremy Moss with Matt Kennerly. Previews are here. One of 12 is here finally. We're starting the previews. Does this mean football's here, Matt? Yes? No?
You know what? Here's what we can say. You know, we're getting into, you know, now that the semester is over pretty much everywhere, there's, you know, maybe a little bit of college baseball left, and we're here just in time for that real dearth of college athletics in a lot of places. So that's how I would look at it. And also, you're welcome.
Yes, you're welcome. We are here. We are going to guide you through June when nothing happens, like said, unless there's college baseball, which hopefully something happens within the league. July, yeah, 4th of July weekend, that's about it. Then camps start with week zero, the last week of July, so we're getting close. And again, we're on Blog Talk Radio, Tune In. We're on YouTube, but I get around to it some days. Some days I forget. It's okay. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, right? Did I say iTunes? Are we there too? Yeah? We want reviews. 5 stars. Tell your friend. Tell 4 friends. It's not an MLM, but still tell 4 friends. And maybe tell them, those 4 friends, to tell 4 friends. But we're here. You guys spoke, and it's Boise State, our first team preview.
I think it's kind of fitting because the Broncos, I mean, and you can feel free to disagree with me, of course, but are the Broncos at a crossroads coming into 2017?
Expand further on what do you mean by crossroads?
So I know that there's been a lot of consternation among Boise State fans over the fact that they haven't won a conference title in the last couple of years. They aren't necessarily the team's, or the, rather the Mountain West's best team anymore. I think on reputation, they might still be the conference's flagship team. But, you know, it's obvious that the expectations there are higher than they are just about everywhere else in the group of five. And at least in 2015 and 2016, they didn't meet that bar. And in some respects, didn't come close for a number of reasons. But to me, I feel like coming into 2017, you know, the last couple of years and this year, it's going to be less about Boise State and more about the fact that, and I'll come to this, you know, probably again and again as we keep going through these previews, the Mountain Division is tough.
Very.
And yeah, and it might be the toughest division in the group of five. I would say there was either that or the American West. And so I don't think that the fact that, you know, Boise went, you know, what was it, 9-3 last year? Or 10-2, or I forget what the exact record was.
10-3, and technically were co-champs, tri-champs of the Mountain Division.
And so for a lot, in a lot of places, that would be awesome. And in a place like Boise, there are some people out there who feel like that's a disaster. And I think that I can see both points of view. And, you know, we'll get into this more when we start talking about the schedule as well. But, you know, Boise State's probably as good as they have been in the last couple of years. And I know that I've mentioned this in previous podcasts, but, you know, the narrative could be a lot different if bounces last year and in 2015 were a little bit different. And honestly, this is still probably the most talented team in the division on both sides of the ball. It's just that, you know, talent alone isn't going to help any team in the division run the table. And that's, I think, where you have to start.
I would say a Mike Bobo would have some strong words for you, but you're not too far off on saying that they're up there for the most talented team in the conference.
Yeah.
Because we'll get through players they've lost and who left the program, but we'll start going into it now, the offense. Athlon, I don't know when you're listening to this, but we're doing this early May, so some of these will be pre-recorded, but this is the middle of May, and Athlon's the only publication to release their all-conference teams. And you hear the hype about Josh Allen from Wyoming, but it's Brett Rypien who's named the number one team quarterback. And if you look, went over what I read, it makes sense because two things. It's not an NFL list. It's for college. And production-wise, I think 4 out of the 5 major categories, Brett Rypien had the better season. The only difference, if I should have it up here, I think was total touchdowns, I think. Was it that where... Allen had more. Yeah, the only difference, yeah, because Allen had 28 TDs. That's the only category he beat Rypien in. Rypien had a better completion percentage, almost half the interceptions, 15-8, had more yards per game by about 60. Overall, he even had more yards. Well, he played one fewer game and still had more than 400 yards. Better yards per attempt, basically everything, better QB rating. And so that makes sense. Like, people are like, well, it's Josh Allen, NFL, but there's still potential with Allen. He's only had 15 career starts, and one was cut short after like 4 plays in 2014 or 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we started. The quarterback, there are issues with Brett Rypien, but the offense, yes, they lose Thomas Spurbeck, who did sign a deal with the Bucs, a 3-year rookie deal. You had Jeremy McNichols also down in Tampa. Basically, everybody. Isn't Tanner Vallejo in Tampa Bay as well, I believe?
That would not surprise me. I forget who was that.
Yeah, Boise like, South there with a dirt cutter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Allen. You go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was going to ramble some more. This is weird. This is a show. We've been doing shows all off season, and now we're stumbling around. What's going on?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, Allen, of course, is justifiably, I think, getting NFL hype. But at least for this college football season, no quarterback in the conference, probably no player in the conference, is going to play a bigger factor for how things shake out all across the conference than Brett Rypien. Because if you kind of deep dive into the numbers, I think he's probably the most significant reason for the team's improvement last year. Like, not only did he improve a lot of those numbers that you mentioned a minute ago from 2015 to 2016, like, he improved his touchdown to interception ratio. You know, his completion percentage took a step back, but he was significantly better in yards per attempt. But even further than that, like, if you go into Bill Connolly's 5 factors, for instance, Boise State on offense took a huge step back in regards to average field position from 2015 to 2016. They lost about 6 yards, you know, every time they started a drive last year. But they were more explosive on offense. They were more efficient on offense. And they were in the top 20 as far as points per trip inside the 40. And I think that Brett Rypien had a lot to do with that. My biggest concern, which I think is, I feel like I'm repeating myself from about a year ago, is, you know, there are still those instances, and we've seen it in both of the years that he's been a starter, where sometimes when he's asked to do too much or when he's pressed to kind of carry everything on his shoulders, that's when the team really starts to suffer. Because there's a trend in both years where, you know, when he's, you know, in his wins, like, he's super efficient. Like, last year in the 10 games that they won, he averaged nearly 10 yards an attempt. He had 22-5 touchdown to interception ratio. In the 3 games that he lost, though, you know, he threw for 30 more yards per game, but he also had a 2-3 touchdown to interception ratio. His completion percentage dropped by about 8 points. His yards per attempt dropped by about a yard and a half. And that, I think, is kind of a reflection of what we saw in his freshman year. So we talk about good Brett Rypien, bad Brett Rypien. You know, how much he can eliminate bad Brett Rypien going into his junior year with two seasons worth of starts under his belt is going to be really significant for this team if it wants to win the division.
It's true that he was really bad in some games. Last year, he did get better in that overall. It wasn't as extreme. Because when you look at the year before, like that New Mexico loss, three interceptions. He had three interceptions versus Utah State where they got blown out. This past year, the only game where he had the Air Force game where he 34% of his passes he completed. Baylor, he had to throw a ton. He did have a decent percentage, like over almost two-thirds, but he was going 32 of 51. Two picks in that loss where they scored only 12 points, settling for field goals. And then even the BYU game, their defense kind of bailed them out a little bit because that was 28-27 win. He didn't look all that great despite having 440 yards. He had two interceptions. Even Washington, the second half was bad. I think your point's extremely valid that when he has bad games, they struggle. I just think he improved on that a little bit, but Boise's going to, like you said, they're at a crossroads. If they're going to move beyond that, he can't have any of those games because to go undefeated, to have one loss, you have to be really, really good to do that. And he needs to take the next step to be more efficient, not make errors, and not have games like Air Force or Washington State in the second half.
Yeah, and to kind of back up that point, like talking about the comparison to Allen again for a second, like we know that Allen has a big arm, but let's not forget that the last 2 years it's been Brett Rypien that's led the conference in 30-plus yards pass plays. And it's not outside the realm of possibility that even with a relatively new group of unproven receivers, which we'll get to in a minute, that he could do it again. I think he's really good, and I think that, at least with regards to Athlon, and I'm assuming probably a lot of other all-conference lists that we're going to see in the weeks to come, he deserves to be the first team all-conference quarterback because he is that good. He has been that good. It's just a matter of taking that next step.
Yeah, it's going to be Rypien probably 85% on being the first team because it's like I said, we'll get to Wyoming later. Who knows when that'll happen? It decides upon you listeners to let us know what team you want to listen to next. But again, like I said, it's college stats and Rippin's had, if you look at the numbers, it's clear cut. Rypien is better. Allen is very good. But the NFL guys are like, oh, he's 6'3", 235. Craig Bull, you'll hear this a million times. Craig Bull, North Dakota State, Carson Wentz, Fireball, all those sorts of buzzwords you'll hear throughout the year about growth spurts and, oh, he played four sports in high school and all that stuff. But it doesn't matter. It's Rypien is going in for the Mountain West season. He's going to be the number one quarterback. And he'll still have to prove it a little bit as well because losing Thomas Spurbeck is a pretty big deal for this offense.
Yes, it is.
You have Cedric Wilson back, but he had to have ankle surgery. He should be good to go to start the season. But Jake Rowe took a step back last year. He didn't play all that great. Everybody thought he'd be the best tight end, but you had Wyatt Demps from Utah State, who's better than him. And Rowe's considered like a comeback player of sorts through different publications. But when you look at what they've lost last year just in Spurbeck, he was the leading receiver in the conference. How are you going to replicate, or who's going to get more carry or more receptions or yards? 80 receptions, 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns. Cedric Wilson had 11 TDs and 1,100 yards. Who's going to replicate, or not replicate, but make up that difference to have his offense be as potent? That's a lot of production to lose.
That's the $64,000 question, if you're asking me. But if you're feeling optimistic like I am, the fact that they have guys who can step in and potentially be productive, I think, is a very good sign. You know, obviously, guys like Sean Modster and I'm trying to remember the other guy's name, AJ Richardson, who, you know, played kind of sparingly in 2016, but they both made their presence felt at the spring game, which I think, even if you can't glean too much from the numbers, the fact that they were getting a lot of targets from the quarterbacks in that game, I think, bodes well. But even beyond that, you know, they have a lot of guys, I think, who are potentially really dynamic, you know, like a Killian Butler, or I'm trying to remember the other guy's name off the top of my head. I might be rambling a little bit here.
The receivers?
Yeah.
Like Alec Don, or that's tight end. Alec Donis, Sean Mostert, Alkaline Butler, are you thinking of?
Yeah.
AJ Richardson? I mean,
yeah, and even further down the depth chart, they have some guys who could step up and contribute who have been in the system for a little while, like David McKenzie or Brock Barr. But, you know, I think they'll probably be fine. They may not have one guy like Spurbeck who, you know, catches 1,500 yards, but it wouldn't surprise me if they had, you know, two guys who were somewhere in that 1,200 to 1,300 yard range again.
I don't know who that'll be, because looking at, it's not just Spurbeck they're losing. Chaz Anderson and McNichols played key roles in the receiving game.
Mm-hmm.
Those three guys combined for over 200 targets and 148 receptions.
That's a lot.
I'm just saying, that's a lot. So maybe
you'll
maybe Jake Earl come back and have 45 catches this year. He had 10 last year. There's an issue. You have the other tight end and Alec DeHaan is there. Four-player team passing the ball, and they lose three of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably true. But if you have guys on the inside, all you're really asking for then is one more guy on the outside to kind of be across from Wilson. And, you know, if they don't have that guy, I'm not sure that that's a big deal, because I think that, you know, Boise in the past has shown that they've been able to be efficient even without that guy.
Well, one player who could make an impact, it was is Austin Crotrell still on the team, right? Austin Crotrell?
Yes, he is.
He's listed as a starter, but only played special teams last year. He's listed as a starting wide receiver. I'm looking at our lads, and they're kind of piecing together, but he could be a guy that he didn't have much production last year at all. Maybe he'll be the number two guy, because that's where he's positioned right here. They project a three wide receiver set, which makes sense for Boise's team for the overall, what they usually do, with Wilson, Cottrell, and Butler. There's going to be a new face that steps up. We just don't know exactly who it'll be. I do expect Jake Rowe to have a better year than last year. They'll rely on him quite a bit, I'm thinking. But that's one of the big question marks in offense, is their number two receiver. And let's just go to running back. They lose their third straight starting running back to the NFL. Jeremy McNichols in Tampa. You had J.J. Pryor in Miami. And then Doug Martin's also there in Tampa Bay as well. They're going to bring in Alexander Mattison to be the starter, which wasn't a shock, but it's a brand new running back who has very little experience. It wasn't like McNichols the year before, where McNichols had, before he became the starter, he saw time on special teams. He ran the ball a little bit. He saw about, like, going back to his rookie year, wasn't amazing, but he appeared in 9 games, had only 20 attempts, but he had 15 receptions. So he was involved in nearly every game, whereas Addison, not quite as much. I think he had, let me get the exact numbers here, but wasn't he around 300 yards rushing, I believe?
Yeah, if you're looking at the numbers, he was at 67 carries for 328 yards.
And 4 touchdowns.
And while he wasn't quite as efficient as McNichols was, you know, obviously, you know, if you can get him to average 5.5 yards per carry, that's going to be awesome. But even if he's not quite as explosive as McNichols was, I don't think that's necessarily a death sentence for this running attack, because, like McNichols, I think he also possesses the capability to be really efficient pass catcher as well. So, you know, we just talked about how there's a lot of question marks at receiver. I think Mattison could help alleviate that a little bit, And I mean, obviously, small sample size caveats apply, but he caught 5 of the 6 targets that he had last year, which I think is right in line with what McNichols did. Like, obviously, McNichols was kind of a volume pass catcher. He ended up with about 500 yards receiving and about 40 catches last year. And honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if Madison equaled that production. And if that's the case, I think that's going to do a lot to kind of answer the concerns as to who's going to catch the ball.
That's a pretty big praise there. He'll fill in what you do know what McNichols did last year, right?
Oh, I know.
I'm just saying that's a pretty big hype to bring on a first-time starter.
Well, I'm not saying that he's going to be able to equal like his rushing production, but I think if he can at least come close to matching his receiving production, if he's catching about 400 yards worth of balls and running for 12 or 1300 yards as a runner, you know, I think that's going to be huge, considering that he's mostly, kind of a relative unknown coming into this job. But then I think we would have said the same thing about McNichols 2 years ago.
That was what I said a few years ago. People are saying, oh, they're going to be great. They're going to be this amazing team. And I kept saying, prop with you and whoever, me and Chris doing the show back then, before that, while we expect them to be fine, that is a huge hole to fill, and it's the same thing I'm going to say this year. Like, he had, like, losing Ajayi before, Jay Ajayi before, we knew McNichols was going to be the guy. And my big question, he's never started before, didn't have as much experience. That's still my big caveat this year, but Madison actually had more rushing yards compared to McNichols as a freshman, because, like I said, McNichols had, let's see here, he had only 159 rushing yards.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Addison had, like I said, over 300, a couple touchdowns. So that position probably will be fine, but it's still something to look out for, because there's no guarantees when you finally get the spotlight to be, you're the guy, what are you going to do with it?
Well, and there's a big if there, too, because if, at least as constructed right now, Boise State only has 4 running backs. So if something happens to Madison, then I think there's a significant problem potentially on Boise State's hands, because Ryan Wolpin was kind of the standout guy at the spring game, but he has never really seen any game action. And then behind him, you have a redshirt freshman in Robert Mahone and, Jake Shaddix, who neither of those guys had a touch last year. So while, yes,
senior Ryan Wolpin as well.
So, I mean, there's going to be a lot on Madison's plate, I think, to be the guy. And if something happens to him, I think that there are serious questions, legitimate questions, about the depth behind him at that point.
Yeah, that's a big deal. And then let's kind of go to the offensive line. They lose 3 all-conference players from last year's team.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why they went junior college to bring in players to fill that role. I don't believe Rippon was sacked a ton, but you're losing that many starting offensive linemen. It's and a new running back, and that's an issue. That could be an issue, because you got offensive line losing multiple starters, lose McNichols, lose your top receiving unit. Maybe we're thinking we're enamored more by Rippon that he'll be fine, but honestly, who's he gonna throw the ball to?
I think
who's gonna run the ball for him, and who's gonna protect him when they lose their Averill, Mario Yaku, and Steven Baggett, all 3 starting offensive linemen. They do have 24 career starts, because you still have Matt Mason Hampton and Archie Lewis, which is great. And then a few other guys have a couple of starts here and there, like John McCone. But it's still a thin unit. That's got to be a lot of concerns.
I think it helps that Lewis and Hampton will anchor the 2 most important pieces of the offensive line. Lewis is going to protect Rippon's blind side, and Hampton, if you haven't been paying attention recently, was just recently named to the Remington Award watch list.
The Remington watch list?
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But he's. I think those 2 will be fine. But it is going to be really interesting to see who steps up to replace those 3 guys you mentioned, because they aren't lacking for options. They just don't know who's going to be those guys yet. Like, there's Ezra Cleveland, who had a pretty good spring game. They have some junior college guys like Zach Trouton, and I'm trying to remember the other guy's name. It escapes me at the moment. Oh, John Ujukwu, who they brought in as you know, within their most recent recruiting class, and it wouldn't surprise me if both of those guys stepped into the interior of the offensive line.
But you know, someone's some weight. He's only 285.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out because I was just reading some notes from the spring game last month, and four of the starters who were projected to start in the fall didn't play because of injuries. And so, like the question I just had about Madison, you know, these guys might have to stay healthy. Otherwise, they're going to run into some question marks where they'll have options. And they have some pretty fairly regarded guys who've been three-star recruits in the past. But none of those guys have had any playing time. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, the career starts, 120 career starts are losing off the offensive line.
I believe Bill Connolly said it was like 119.
Well, 41, 38, 40. Like that. Yes, I'm looking at that right there, yeah. But 41, 38, 40. So, yes, that's technically 119. I apologize. But
nailed it.
That's a lot of starts. That's a lot to lose. And so, like I said, junior college route, they do that to bring in some extra players for depth. They could be starting a redshirt freshman, which is that's always dicey. But I think the biggest thing for the offense here is that they have the same offensive coordinator last year as they do this year. And it's been a while they could say that. And that is Zach Hill is back. And so that's a pretty big deal where they're not that there is a difference in change in offensive philosophy, but it's the same guy. There's a comfort level for having that back with your team. Not worrying, a different voice, maybe a few different things here and there they want to go over and work with you on for your quarterback, running back, lineman, technique, or whatnot. Having the same guy is a big deal. Now, and Zach Hill have more confidence in himself because he's been the OC for coming into another year. And that's just as important, in my opinion, as getting the right starters because it's basically his call to who's going to be on the offensive line, who's going to be that number two receiver. He doesn't have to come into a spring or get promoted from within to be the OC race to kind of learn who these players are who he may not have been extremely familiar with before. Yeah, last year Hill was with the team prior, but he was a position coach, not the OC. And just knowing the team better, he can make a much better choice about who's starting or who's not, who should get the ball, who should I target more often, or tendencies. And that's going to help his team overall because Boise State's had issues retaining coaches because when you're a good team, your OCs and position coach get picked off by somebody else.
But like I said, I think the fact that they have guys to choose from at just about all of those positions, save for running back, I think that kind of makes his life a lot easier.
It certainly does. So we're going to go to the defense really quick, but where would you maybe rank this offense out of the Mountain West? Would you still put it in the top couple?
Absolutely.
Number one?
I think they're definitely in the conversation, yeah.
Okay, I agree. I can agree with that because if you have the quarterback, you have the players. Usually, you're going to be fine. He'll make these guys look good.
It's the other side of the ball that I think has bigger questions that need to be addressed.
Defense. Who's going to tackle?
That is an excellent question. So here's something. Can I just
what do you got
before we get into this? So
for sure.
This is kind of going way back to the beginning of the year, but Bill Connolly had this article from January 31st where it was talking about returning production. And, you know, you can go into it. Maybe we can link to it in the podcast article. But long story short, what I want to point out before we start talking about the defense individually or by positions is that Boise State ranks 112th in returning production on this side of the ball.
Uh-oh.
They're losing a lot of guys, and while they have some key pieces coming back, you know, I think that that's where the bigger questions lie. Is, you know, yes, they have David Moa on the defensive line right there in the middle, but who's going to be lining up next to him
or behind him? Tanner Vallejo's gone.
Yeah,
they lose. You mentioned to me before the show, I spaced his name again. Who's giving up football again to go back to baseball full-time.
Joe Marchard.
Joe Marchard. Yeah, he's with the Cubs before. You lose him. You lose Sam McCassell, who's gone through, who played a big, pretty big role. Like I said, you also lose Elliot Hoyt, defensive tackle. They have some guys back with production, like the defensive line, but linebackers, where it's the biggest issue, I think, with Darren Lee, Ben Weaver, and Vallejo gone, that's where there's going. And then two other ones, like Joe Martorano and Cameron Miles, also are gone. The front will be fine, but it's that linebacking group that's where the biggest question mark is on this defense overall.
So then if we want to start with the linebackers, who do we think is the biggest loss in that group? Is it Ben Weaver or is it Darren Lee in the middle?
I would argue Vallejo, but he was more, I think his, didn't have issues, but people more targeted on him and ran away from him or passed away from him. I would say Weaver because he had over 80 tackles last year, 10% on the team. But then again, you look at Lee, he got to behind line scrimmage much more frequently than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
With six and a half TFLs and a trio of sacks. They're two different players because one got to the quarterback and one made the plays when they got to that second level. So I would probably say Lee just because if you can get negative plays, you're doing a better job overall. And he had nine and a half of those, I would say.
So then how do we feel about the guys who are probably going to end up replacing them?
They're experienced because you got Whitlock and Vander Esch, both upperclassmen. Those guys, and they both played last year as well. They didn't have that many tackles overall, but both of those guys got to the quarterback, which is a big deal, to almost the same clip as Lee did. I think they're going to be the guys stepping up right away, but it's the depth, like they're returning only four guys, I believe. Four guys who played in any games last year at linebacker. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not many. That's an issue. And then one had only two games in a Joe Pro. I'm going to butcher his name. Provisano had only two games last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have the experience to. They just don't have the experience coming back. And hopefully they did well in spring and can come in right away and be the guy. But losing that type of production, it's huge.
I would say yes, but I'm also really fascinated, especially by the guy who's probably going to replace Darren Lee in the middle, who, you know, saw kind of spot time as a freshman, you know, Tyson Maeva. You know, he had 19 tackles as a true freshman. He had a tackle for a loss. And he might be in the heart of this defense coming into 2017, and I think that that's really interesting that they may give him that kind of responsibility. Do we think that that's a good move?
Who else do you got? That's my question.
That's true.
Who else is there going to step in to play a middle linebacker? Because you lost the other guy who probably could have been the starter was Joe Martorano, where he played almost as much as him as Mavea. Had similar production overall, played in fewer games, 12-9, but it would have been between those two guys, and having both would have been great to have a competition of some sort, but it's going to be Mavea because, like I said, there's nobody else there that's played middle linebacker besides Joe Provisano, who played two games last year.
Yeah, I was looking at the
upperclassmen, which
exactly,
is good, but
we have one other guy that's listed as a middle linebacker.
I think the defensive line can mask any issues, at least early on, and for the linebacking group, because the defensive line can slow get. Because it depends. What do they want the defensive line to do? Do they want it to just stuff the run or get to the quarterback? Because if you look what they did last year, the defensive line was very good at getting behind the line of scrimmage and stopping the run, running the game. Because Sam McCassell, who's gone, he had amazing year, 14 TFLs, 6.5 sacks. And David Moa, he's back. Is he? Yeah, sorry. My eyesight is not good looking at this chart here. David Moa is back, and he had double digits TFLs. So if the offensive line, or defensive line, excuse me, can get to the quarterback and stop the running game early from allowing them to bounce off for extra yards but stop them behind the line of scrimmage, that's going to help the linebacking group overall because they weren't really asked to do that outside of the one Darren Lee, that's it. Because usually you see it, linebackers usually have sacks, TFLs, not in this Boise State defense. And if they can keep that the same, that's fine. You just need linebackers to wrap up and make tackles and maybe cover a crossing route or a tight end from time to time.
I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Jabril Frazier to really step up his production. I think if he can become the kind of guy that Kamalai Correa was for the Broncos a couple of years ago, that's going to be a huge difference. Because if you go back to 2015, you know, Kamalai Correa was probably their best defender. He had 11 tackles for loss and 7 sacks. And, you know, last year, as a sophomore, Frazier ended up with 5 and 4 respectively. And I think if he can double those numbers and be a real force along that offensive line, that's going to make a huge difference. Because if you can pair that up with what we think Moa can do in the middle, that's going to make that that defensive line really fierce.
I believe with the NFL. I'm not sure where he's at now, but
I think he's in Baltimore.
He was like, oh no, he got drafted. That's right. No, not UDFA. He got drafted. That's right. Yeah, he's out in Baltimore. So yeah, if you can get that type of production, who wouldn't want that on your team? But let's move to secondary, where for years, like we mentioned this in our show where we talked about who do you want to come back for spring practice, and then if you look at who they've gotten drafted and picked up, like Dante Dion and other players as well, their defensive back is always. Backfield is always loaded with players. They lose 2 starters from last year. Also, Dylan Sumner Gardner is no longer on the team. Not that he played a ton last year because he was suspended a bit, but he had some hype surrounding him. Because here's the guys they do lose that are a big deal. Chancellor James and Jonathan Moxie, who is with also with Tampa Bay. Everybody's with Tampa Bay for Boise State. Tyler Horton and Cameron Hatsfield are the guys coming back. A lot of career starts, a lot of production. They also, one thing the defense does as well in the secondary, they also go after the quarterback as well. And if you look at, sorry, I'm trying to look at these numbers here, but they, like last year, they had almost 12 TFLs. So they're not afraid to do a corner blitz or get guys to step up to help out. So again, this could be another way to help the linebacking group if the defense is just as aggressive last year as they are this year. One thing they do miss is Jonathan Moxie's pass breakups where, just at 13, that's all. No big deal.
So here's an interesting question for you. Now that DeMonte Casey's in the NFL, is Tyler Horton the best cornerback in the conference?
Is Andrew Wingard a safety or cornerback?
Andrew Wingard is a safety.
Dang it. I believe so because I'm trying to think. He had 9 pass breakups last year. He was going to be my guy to mention, like, he's the guy to anchor the secondary. Utah State's defense still recovering. There could be somebody from San Diego State who steps up. I should probably look at Athlon's all-conference team, but I think it's yes is a safe answer because Air Force loses everybody in defense. CSU usually doesn't have a great secondary overall. Wyoming, like I said, safety for Wingard. UNLV, usually not the case, but so sure, I'll say yes. Why not?
Because I think, because last year there was a lot of expectation, as kind of, he was a 4-star guy, if I'm not mistaken. But I think he was every bit as good as advertised coming out of, he started as a freshman and he was every bit as good as advertised. And last year, maybe the interception number didn't jump off the page, but, he followed up 12 pass defenses in 2015 with another 9 in 2016. And I think that, that's a real asset, especially in a division that could have some very dangerous receivers like Michael Gallup or, C.J. Johnson in Wyoming. So what's going to be really interesting is who is the guy that starts opposite of him? Is it another one of those sophomores like DeAndre Pierce who steps up? Is it... I'm trying to figure out who else they have in the secondary. I think whoever that second guy is going to be could be one of those really subtle X factors that no one's thinking about right now. But again, I think this is... in an instance where you're talking about a position that has a lot of talent, like Pierce was a 3-star guy coming out of high school. Robert Lewis, who is on the roster, was a three-star guy. So they have some pedigree. They just need to find the guy who's going to step up and seize that job, because I think if he can be, I don't know, 80% of what Horton is, they're going to have probably the best cornerback duo in the conference.
Two things on that. I'm looking at Athlon's, because they're the only one that's out, so this is something we should kind of mention. We'll mention these time to time when Phil Steele comes out, when the official all-conference comes out. Looking at who they have on the secondary, there's only one. It's only Horton. That's it. Everybody else, like, there's no other safety otherwise. It's only Horton. Like, the other cornerbacks, Jachary from San Jose State, Jalen Davis, Utah State, forgot about him, Ron Smith, or the pair of Wyoming guys, Rico Galford or Antonio Hull. But Horton's the first team. There's nobody else from Boise secondary otherwise besides Horton. But their freshman class could be pretty good, because Jermarne Brown is their highest rated recruit out of any defensive back on the roster right now. Better than Tyler Horton was. So maybe it's him. Maybe Marquise Evans, who also had a better grade than Horton coming out of high school. So maybe it could be one of those guys. Tyreek Jones, Canijo, who I mentioned, he's also a freshman, going to be a safety most likely, I believe. He's rated pretty highly. So maybe they'll do some sort of rotation early on. But it could be one of these young guys who stepping in right away, which is when they play Washington State early on, that'll be a big test.
And I mean, I don't, you know, even though Horton may be the only preseason all conference guy, I don't necessarily want to undersell Cameron Hartsfield either, because, you know, Chancellor James was pretty good last year, but I think Hartsfield was probably just as good back there in the secondary. And I think having him back there as a steadying presence is going to be a benefit too.
Because the only difference, really, they had nearly the... Here's their numbers really quick. Tackles, 64.5 to 52. And that's James there. Okay, tackles for DBs, whatever. TFLs were basically the same, 3.5 to 2. The big difference was between interceptions and pass breakups. James had 3 picks, whereas Hartsfield had 3 breakups. And so they easily could have mirrored numbers had he caught those pass breakups instead of knocking them down. Their picks... he might be an all-conference player preseason with those interceptions. That's the only real difference, but INTs and pass breakups, to be honest, are pretty similar, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a correlation. Like, you know, if you get a lot of pass defenses, they tend to turn into a few interceptions the next time around, or the next season. And so if you have a team, especially, you know, a guy like Horton, for example, who's shown a proficiency for playing really good pass defense, it wouldn't surprise me if he came down with like 4 or 5 balls. And if they had, you know, 1 or 2 other guys in that secondary who came down with 2 or 3 of their own. And I think if you're trying to paint the optimistic picture for this team, turnover luck, I think, is going to have a lot to do with it. Because one of the things I think that got overlooked in the narrative, in the kind of the pessimism that some Boise State fans have, is they were really unlucky last year. They ended up -9. And if that kind of regresses to the mean, if they're, you know, even if they're like -1 or -2, that in itself could make a really big difference. Like, if this team can get back to being, you know, one of the better ball hawking teams in the conference, that's, I think, where my personal optimism comes from. Is their ability to do that, because they have talent. It's just a matter of showing that they can do it.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal, because they had overall, like I said, -9, -0.69 per game. That was only better than Fresno State.
And they only had.
And usually, if you have a.
I was just going to add that they only had 7 interceptions as a team last year.
Yeah, that was near the bottom as well. You had Nevada, UNLV, and Fresno with 5.
And that was.
Their big issue was fumbling the ball.
And I was going to say, and that was after having 22 back in 2015. So if they split the difference, you know, if they can, and oddly enough, they had 22 in 2014 as well. My point is, if they could get back to, let's say, 15 or 16 interceptions, that can make a huge difference for a team that is probably going to be as potent on offense as it was a year ago. and with the ability to finish drives as well as they did a year ago, even despite the questions on offense.
Do you want a fun fact here for Boise State in the Mountain West?
I would love a fun fact.
They've been in the league since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
They've only had 1 year of a negative turnover margin overall last year.
Huh.
2012, they were plus 20, which is freaking amazing. They were plus 3 in 2013. 2014, they were plus 7. And then last year, they were plus 9.
Interesting.
So if they get back to being, not even that, if they get just a 0, like they're even across the board, and they were 10-2 at minus 9. Look who's at the negative here. Fresno, minus 9, had one win. Hawaii struggled for part of the year, finished 7-7, minus 8. Utah State finished with a losing record, minus 5. If you can get right in the middle, but then again, you see San Jose State with minus 1, where they weren't very good last year. UNLV was plus 2 and didn't make a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
But for Boise State, if they're minus 9 and still winning that many games, imagine if they were just 0 in average.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you look at the what their turnover margin actually was versus what, according to Bill Connolly's numbers, they would expect it to be, there's a difference of 8 turnovers on offense, or, you know, a combined 8 turnovers between the offense and the defense. So if they can turn some of those pass defenses into interceptions, which I definitely think they can, that's when you're looking at a conference title contender.
Ooh, big time talk. All right. We're done with the offense. Anything else we need to add? Do we need to? Do you want to? Any special teams notes you want to toss out our way? Are we good on
that? I think we're pretty much okay on that.
Let's do this. I'm parched. Let's take a quick timeout, and we'll come back with game by game results. Our results in early May. All right, you ready for the schedule, Matt? They're a week one team, not a week zero team. I was going to say something dramatic, but no.
We can call it week one part two, because there are games before that.
Yeah, or as ESPN like to say around this time, opening weekend.
There we go.
Tried to fudge it, but we're not going to dive too deep into these teams, really. Maybe a few nuggets here and there. Should we, since we didn't discuss this before, do we need to keep track of each and every game here for a record for posterity? Prosperity, I should say. Not
well, I don't know about you, but I'm doing the same thing that I did last year. I have my Excel sheet ready to go.
Are you going to be to the extreme where, while you're picking these games, you cross-reference so when we're talking Utah State, that you'll have the correct record in place or the from this earlier
yes,
show?
Yes, that's exactly what I did last year, and I'm doing it again.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm just curious because I know I would go around and say this and that and say, oh, I have 8 teams with 7 wins or something throughout the league overall. I'm just curious what your process is. I will keep track as well, obviously. I definitely should. Let me update my spreadsheet here as well. But week one, not an easy matchup, really. They host Troy out of the Sun Belt. September 2nd, TBD on TV and everything so far. Troy's a team that's typically pretty good in the Sun Belt and usually a challenger for that conference.
They definitely surprised
and
last year.
They have a new, isn't their coach in year 3? Was it Neil Brown, their head coach,
yes.
Right? So being at home, this should be a victory, but we're not going to, like I said, we're not going to dive super deep in all these games, but this is a game where Troy can cause some surprises for Boise State.
I mean, just at a glance, what you're looking at with Troy is a really senior heavy team on both sides of the ball. Like, they have a pretty good quarterback in Brandon Silvers, who's a dual threat guy. He had 4 touchdowns rushing, you know, had about 4.6 yards per carry, but also had 23 touchdowns through the air. But, you know, he's not the only guy. They have a senior running back, you know, Jordan Chung, who had 1,300 yards. They've got, you know, guys on defense.
Senior receiver.
Yeah,
Emmanuel Thompson, 80 receptions back. Yeah, senior.
They've got like 3 or 4 guys on their defensive line who are seniors. So, I mean, this is an experienced team that is not going to be afraid of showing up at Albertson Stadium. But that being said, I still like Boise's chances, even with the questions on both sides of the ball. I think that the talent base with Boise is still, you know, a little bit above what Troy has to offer. So if you're asking me now, I would say Boise's probably going to get a little bit of a fight, but I think that they're definitely good enough to pull away late.
Sure. There's also one other player, Jamarius Henderson, Memphis transfer. He, you know, is that Memphis to Troy? That's a slight upgrade. He sat out last year at over 300 yards as a freshman out in Memphis. So that's just another experienced guy. And the offense, they're saying, could be better than their 34 points per game last year. And that's where this Boise defense, which loses, like we mentioned, all the linebackers, half their secondary. And with Henderson being a 1-2 punch, he had a 51 yard during the spring game. And Coach Neal wants to have a more consistent running game. And they want to defend the pass better. That's a couple of notes he mentioned from spring. So defending the pass better should be music to Chaz or Wilson, Cedric Wilson's ears, and Brett Rypien sling the ball. This is going to be a shootout, I'm telling you. It's going to be like first one to 50 is going to win this game.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I would say first to 30. I would go maybe like, you know, 30 to 21 or something like that. Troy's going to give a lot of teams a lot of fits in 2017, but I think that Boise State's good enough to beat them.
ESPN's FPI gives Boise State a pretty solid 75% chance to win this game. I think that's a bit high. Mm-hmm. What does Bill C have in his prediction?
Bill puts it at 80%.
Boise should win because they went undefeated at home last year, and they're predicting, like Bill Connolly, 14-point victory for Boise, which I can see that where it's exchanging touchdown, field goal, something like that, where it's like 14-6 and then maybe 21-13, 28-16, something like that. But this is not like people like, oh, Boise, they'll play teams like Washington. They'll go play out in the Chick-fil-A Classic and SEC team, playing Oregon at home. It's not on that level, but this is still a team where if they're not ready, they could lose this game. But are we both saying a victory 1-0 for the Broncos? I am as well. My eyes did not just copy and paste from FB schedule. So week 2, this is the big game. My internet's going crazy. They're playing Washington State week 2. Luke Fault versus Brett Rypien will be one of the best quarterback matchups in the country. Like not necessarily that week, but out of guys who could potentially be in the NFL and for numbers are pretty enough, this is one of the best quarterback matchups all year to see. And Washington State, we're gonna eventually talk. We at some point talked to the guys from Cook Center. They lose a couple of their top receivers, and that's gonna be an issue for them as well.
Yeah, but I think, you know, with a guy like Luke Falk going into his senior year at the helm of one of the most potentially potent offenses, even losing a couple of guys at receiver in the country, you know, Boise State's going to have to be ready for this one, and they're definitely going to need those young guys in the secondary to step up because, you know, we know Horton's going to be good, we know Hartsfield's going to be solid, but those other guys are still going to have to account for guys like Tavaris Martin or, you know, Isaiah Johnson Mack or Robert Lewis or whoever ends up in that wide receiver rotation.
Well, you gotta be seven deep, though.
The bright side is that they'll probably be able to score a lot of
points,
too.
Mike Leach's defense usually isn't all there. So, my internet's being awkward here. What is the projection from Bill Connolly for this game? It's a Boise State victory, right, I believe, or close?
It is a 50-50 proposition.
It is. It's at Pullman. You can't get closer than this. Besides 50-50, he goes even one step further. I got it here. 0.1 projected margin of victory for Boise State.
Yeah.
0.1. How do you see this one playing out then? Because last year, Boise looked to be pretty good in the first half. It was the second half where there was issues. Or they decided to not give the ball to their best running back in a long time, McNichols. They decided to throw the ball because that was an issue a lot with Boise last year. Maybe that was a thing of Zach Hill being the OC, but they wanted to throw the ball quite a bit and all the time, whereas running the ball would have been perfectly fine.
See, I think this is probably a first to 40 situation.
Did you see what ESPN's FPI projection of this game is?
I have not, no.
Boise State is given a 17... I'm going to double check this, but 17.5% chance of winning. Meaning they have Wazoo as a huge favorite in this game. Huge favorite.
Okay, so here's where I see it.
That's interesting.
I like Boise's offensive potential. And if you asked me to put money on either one of these defenses, I would definitely trust Boise State before I trusted in Washington State. And so if it were me, I would say Boise State would win this game too.
One thing to note is when we look at all the early preseason magazines or like the Mark Slaybach, Dennis Dodd, those type of top 25s, most of them have Boise and Washington in that 20 to 25 range. So this could be a matchup, which would be great. Two top 25 teams facing off week two. But I'm going to lean toward Boise State, not because of being any sort of homer. Washington State has historically, the past couple years, started slowly. They lost to Eastern Washington last year. They lost to Boise State. And they ended the season on a three-game losing streak.
That's true.
So I think Boise can get the win, but I'm surprised that the ESPN FPI is overwhelmingly in favor of Wazoo. That's a big difference because when you look at Bill Connolly, his advanced numbers, I'm going crazy tonight. They're not too far off between what ESPN has FPI compared to between the two. So that disparity means this game is going to be interesting, but 2-0 for the Broncos. 2-0.
You know what's funny? Here's another fun fact. Second year in a row that Bill Connolly had this game at 50-50.
Ooh. That is a good fact. That's a good one there. Excellent find. I want to see. Well, hold on. Let me see what ESPN has last year. I want to check what theirs was because it was 17.5% for Wazoo last year. It was a basically almost the same. I don't have the number percentage here, but it mentions a 14-point victory for Wazoo as a projection. And this year it's 11.7. So probably, what's that? Probably 25% toward Wazoo last year. So, but the 50-50, I like that better.
All right.
All right. Next week, this game always kills me. Hosting New Mexico. Football Bob hosting them. Going to the blue turf again. They beat Boise last time on the blue turf. They got crushed last year. I have to go Boise State again because New Mexico loses my favorite player in Tarion Gibson last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I trust Bill Connolly with a 91% victory percent chance.
See,
why not? They have no New Mexico's defense is come on.
And that was going to be what I said. Like, my concern is not so much that they're losing Gibson because as we'll get to New Mexico at some point. They've got like a bajillion running backs. To me, the bigger concern is the bigger concern for me is the fact that they're replacing so many key parts on defense. Like they're losing Nick DiAvanzo, they're losing Dakota Cox, they're losing Donnie White. You know, three of their top four tacklers, linebacker, and they're also losing, you know, four of their top tacklers in the secondary. They're basically, you know, losing just about everybody who contributed, you know, a fair amount in that secondary from last year. And I think if you're Boise State, you should be licking your chops at getting to face a relatively untested New Mexico defensive backfield.
All right, let's just go quick here. That's a victory right there. There might be some points for New Mexico. They do have Lamar Jordan back as their quarterback again. They're bringing in some transfers. They're actually looking at another JUCO guy, maybe signed by the time we talk about the Lobos. But I got to go all Boise State because last year their dominant victory, and they don't want to be embarrassed again at home. So next game, this should be another victory here. We need to hurry this along. We're at 57 minutes here. 57 minutes. All right. So next time, the next game is playing the Hoos, Virginia, at home, Friday, September 22nd. UVA won two games last year.
Okay.
They're terrible.
I know.
They are. They have Bronco Mendenhall is their head coach, year two, and he brought basically everybody from BYU with him, which, as a coach, that's kind of an issue. This quote does not give me any confidence UVA is going to win this game. Here's from Bronco Mendenhall. Our team is going to look significantly different in the fall with 30 new players joining us. And that's before you count walk-ons.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, their problem is probably going to be the kind of problems they had last year on offense, because who's their quarterback going to be? You know, they have one guy, I think they have one guy who's a senior, Kurt Benkert, who, you know, he was okay, but not any real great shakes. And I think, you know, if you're going to beat Boise, you're going to have to score points. And I don't know that Virginia is up to that task. So I feel like the Broncos are going to win this one pretty handily.
They should. Also, it should be noted that when your top returning player is a halfback, they have Olmedide as Zacchaeus. They don't list his rushing yards. They list his receiving yards. So, no, it's UVA's been terrible. They do have Ruffin McNeil on staff, which is pretty cool. Ben Kurt's a transfer from ECU, so that's where he came from last year. He probably followed Ruffin McNeil along. And so, he played last year as well. Sorry, I apologize about that. He is former ECU transfer, but they're going to win. One thing to note where it could be interesting, Bronco Mendenhall, who we've seen enough when BYU plays Boise or Utah State, his defense is usually pretty good, but that's probably the one area. So if they can turn over margin and keep it close that way, that's how they could make this game be more competitive. So that puts me at Boise State 4-0 at the bye week. Then they go to BYU Friday, October 6th.
And this is a really interesting game.
It is. It's a ESPN game already, that late 8 Mountain Time kick. It's at BYU, which means the Cougars are going to be favored, which when you look at ESPN FPI, they give Boise only a 38% chance of winning. Bill Connolly has the opposite thing, 53% victory for Boise State. So with BYU, they sort of have a returning quarterback in Tanner Mangum. He didn't play last year because Taysom Hill, they inexplicably gave him the start back, his job back. I will say that.
He was okay. Let's not disparage Taysom Hill too much.
No, that's what I mean. Mangum's a better passer. I'll say that flat out for sure. And no, but Hill's not a bad player. But as for a quarterback, yeah, Mangum's a better quarterback. And here's the thing, this will be a good, by this point in the season, we should know who the secondary is for Boise State. And BYU, I follow them closely as well. Their wide receiving core, garbage. Sorry, not very good.
Well, it's interesting because BYU and Boise State, just at a glance, quarterbacks aside, seem almost to be kind of a mirror image of one another on offense. Like, they're both replacing very productive running backs. And they're both replacing, at least in BYU's case, the Cougars are replacing their top three pass receivers from last year.
And those weren't very good players either. Sorry. Saying it.
No. So then it's no big deal.
Not just that. Defense is where anything with BYU, they're really good. Klani Satake, for who he has guys like Butch Powell, linebacker, Francis Bernard, linebacker. They get Fred and Troy Warner, secondary linebacker guys, are all really good defenders. But like you said, losing Jamal Williams, who's with the Packers now, got drafted alongside Devontae Mays with that team and Aaron Jones from UTEP, they don't have a starting running back. It's likely going to be this guy, Canada, but they don't have a starting running back right now.
I think it's more significant that they're losing so much production up front in their front four. And I think that if you're Boise State, this is an opportunity to really establish the running game.
No, you're right. There's guys like they lose Seitao too, and there's this guy, who is it? Travis Tulioma, should be back with the team, but he's been hurt a lot. Yeah, the defensive line is an issue. Linebacker, this is probably the best linebacking group Boise will play all year. Pretty confident in saying that.
Maybe
San Diego State, Wyoming, and Logan Wilson there. They have some good linebackers, but overall, this is probably the best one I can pretty confidently say. But the offense, here's the thing of the offense. They're moving away from. I don't want to go too much in this game because we'll talk about BYU a lot, but with Ty Detmer as their OC, it's more of a pro-style offense. So not what we've seen in the past with like three to five wide receivers from BYU with Taysom Hill and shotgun a lot. They're under center, being a pro style attack. So, but Tanner Mangum, we saw, if you watched the Poinsettia Bowl, he didn't look very good. Weather was an issue, but he just didn't look very good. But he's going to be a guy who can throw the ball. Again, I think it's come back to me is if they can run the ball. Because they have Squally Canada, who went to Washington State, also a Boise commit at some point during his career. They don't have a running back. They may play three guys who you're a passing running back. You're a guy who's going to get the ball on first down. You're going to be a blocking running back. They don't know who their starter is. Offensive line loses a couple guys as well. But the one receiver is Jordan Trinneman, who's super fast and speedy. That's their big threat. But they don't have very many guys downfield to throw the ball. So this is where the secondary for Boise, not that it could take a night off a little bit, but they could focus on other areas. And that's where I think the Boise defense could have a pretty big game, because BYU, they're trying to get the tight end back again. They don't really have a tight end. They have this guy, MLP they call him. It's Moroni Lalupatite. He's going to be a tight end, but they... Mm-hmm. It's good. It's the only intrigue really for offense. It's going to be different than what they've seen last year. So that could be where BYU has an edge. But no running back, no starter, not a great receiving group. Offensive line's replacing a bunch of guys. Despite Athlon saying they're a top 25 O line, I think this is a game where Boise's defense needs to have a big game, because the offense. Well, look at what happened last year. Look at all the turnovers Boise had, and they still barely won the game. Weren't they minus six and one last year, I believe.
Can we guarantee that BYU won't punt from or won't run fake punts from their own end zone in this
game
again?
That was the best thing ever. I'm pretty sure Kalani Sitake is not going to do that again.
I hope that they burned all copies of that part of the playbook.
I remember the reason why they did that, because we know last year's Boise's field position wasn't great for either side of the ball. What they said, and it's actually true. Like, oh, we see something in Boise's special teams, which you might. Great. But there's never a play 4th and 19 from your own one that's worth running. Outside.
Yeah, you don't even do that in, like, NCAA 14.
You don't do that in Madden. Unless it's, like, your final play of the game. No, you don't do that. But that... Also, two things to look out for. Is there going to be a nut punch and a crazy play like that? So who are you taking in this game? It's at BYU.
I mean, I like this game to be close, just like it has been in the last few years. But I mean, I like Boise here too. So I've got them winning.
Man, from what I've said, you'd think this would be a blowout for me for Boise State, right? from what I've been going with. But they're a similar position as the quarterback. Like, so they're very similar QBs in my opinion. They both lose a lot of talent on the outside. The quarterback's going to make this team. I'm going to say Boise will get the victory because, and I know it's week six, so they'll have a running back put in place and everything, but here's my main reason why I'm going for Boise State to win. If you look who BYU plays before, they have LSU and University of Utah and Wisconsin the weeks prior. So they're going to be pretty beat up going into this game. So that's why I'm going to go Boise State for the victory. So are we both 5-0 at this point?
I think we are.
I think we need to hustle through here. We're an hour 9. Sorry. Well, sorry not sorry, because we talked football for a long time, but it's a... Hope you have a long commute, folks. So, all right, the next big game. Jeez, I like their schedule. They go to San Diego State. Finally, we get to see this game. Finally, after years and years of Aztecs dominating the league and wanting to claim Boise State's crown, we can see them for one of the final times. This could be the very last time at Qualcomm Stadium for this team.
Could be, yeah.
I don't want to get into that because it's a mess, what's going down there in San Diego, but this might be my favorite game of the year for Boise State.
Definitely.
They haven't played... Who won the last time these two teams played? Was it San Diego State? Because they won back-to-back games, right?
In 2014, the last time they played, Boise won 38-29.
Okay, I must be thinking of a different one, the one before at home. But this...
You're thinking of 2013.
When they
beat
them on the blue with their special teams, why they beat Boise State. So you got the obviously defending Mountain West champs, the 22 wins the past 2 years in San Diego State. we don't need to go too much because we're going to talk about guys like Rashard Penny, Juwan Washington, Christian Chapman. And sorry, Aztec fan, Chapman's not a first four team quarterback at all. He might not even be top six, in my opinion. And that's where this game could be won or lost, is if how well they're going to run the ball, which they should run the ball very well anyways for the Aztecs, even though they lose guys like Nico Siragusa and the best running back yardage-wise ever in Donald Pumphrey.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you see is what you get with the Aztecs, you know, this coming fall as it has been in the last couple of years. I feel like this is the kind of game that could devolve into a rock fight on both sides of the ball, but honestly, even with all the key pieces that the Aztecs are losing on defense, I still like them to win this game at home, and so I have Boise losing this game.
I can see that as a possibility. Wouldn't surprise me. Here's a couple notes because we'll get to these games later again. Aztecs lose four offensive linemen. Big deal. Depth at quarterback is an issue. Chapman barely participated in spring. You have Ryan Agnew as the backup. They brought in Ryan Lindley to help out. They lose Calvin Munson. They lose Alex Barrett. They lose DeMonte Casey. So they lose a lot on defense, but they should be fine. But on the road, I got to say, the way the Boise schedule, I'm with you. I think Aztecs are going to get this victory on the road. At home, sorry.
Yeah.
This schedule's, look at this after the bye week. They got at BYU, at San Diego State, hosting Wyoming. Safety dance again? Come on. We got to have that back, right?
As much as I love the safety dance, I think Boise State should win that game against Wyoming.
They're at home. They're at home. And like I said, we don't need to double up on all these games, but just a couple quick notes. Obviously, we mentioned Josh Allen earlier in the show, number one quarterback versus number two, Allen 2, according to Athlon. Likely be the case. They lose Tanner Gentry. They lose Chase Roulier center. Sophomore My Little Hall will be the number one running back, looks like, to potentially replace Brian Hill. Logan Wilson was the freshman of the year. Andrew Wingard, stud, could be an All-American this year. I don't want to break down the game too much, but Boise State's given, I think their 77% chance to win this game by ESPN is way overblown. Because Bill C has that, well, he's even higher, 81%. I think that's way too high.
See, I think one thing that you'll probably want to watch by the time this game rolls around is the fact that, you know, we talked about Boise's not returning that much production on the defensive side of the ball. On the other hand, Wyoming is fourth among FBS teams in returning production on defense. So I think if they're going to keep the game close, you know, the young guys who stepped into the limelight last year, like Logan Wilson and Johanna Guyfan, are going to have to step up and play big. But again, I think that they might be losing enough on offense that Boise State can make up that difference.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well, because these defenders for Wyoming have been the guys since their 2 years ago where they were just awful on defense. These guys finally come into their own. I think the defense can keep them in it, but I trust Boise State, what they've done historically, to be able to win this game on offense.
Yeah.
All right, really quick. Next game at Utah State. Can we just go victory real quick? Or do you have any thoughts on Utah State?
I mean, I think, like I said, we'll get into this later. I think Utah State will be better, but I don't think they're going to be good enough to beat Boise. So we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And just the numbers really quick. ESPN gives Boise a 72% chance to win, and Bill Connolly a 68% chance, probably because it's on the road. And the Aggies losing Rayshard Lewis is a big deal. And we'll see what their offense is with new OC David Yost coming in. So that's a victory. Then Nevada, another rival game. I think I'm predicting too many victories here. Are we predicting too many victories? Because I think they'll beat Nevada just because I don't think their defense is going to step up and be good enough this year. Plus, Nevada at this point, we don't know who their quarterback is going to be, whether it's going to be Cromwell from the Alabama transfer or be who's on the team last year? No. Sorry, Ty Gange. I wanted to say somebody else. Tyler Stewart. No, Ty Gange, who did okay, but I got to say, at home, what Nevada's done, they do have James Butler. pretty good running back, but with the air raid, they're going to probably run with Matt Mumme and Jay Norvell. I got to say, Boise's still going to be victorious in this matchup at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nevada's going to have a lot of work to do in 2017. So this is the kind of game where I think Boise should be able to, you know, blow the Wolfpack out.
92% chance victory by Bill Connolly.
And that might be low.
Might be low?
Yeah.
Wow. ESPN has them 86%. All right, next game is at CSU. Is this year Colorado State finally upends Boise State?
I mean, they almost did it last year, right?
They needed a lot of help, though. Those onside kicks in second half after that weather was kind of cleared up a little bit.
Is this the? Here's a better question. Is this the game that decides the Mountain Division?
Ooh, look at the schedule. Very possibly. Because it's... I'd have to look at the other schedule, but I think so, because who else is going to be in the division? I don't think Wyoming's going to be in contention for the division this year. And Air Force loses so much, they'll be struggling. So I will say yes.
I remember my impression of the game last year is that Colorado State lost it more than Boise State won it.
Well, remember, they were down, I think, 21-3, weren't they?
I mean, it was a one-score game in the end. I just remember that the Rams got off to a really slow start in the first half. And Boise State did just enough to kind of hold them off.
Well, CSU had all those onside kicks at the end. I think they had to recover a couple. And that final one came up short. But looking back, like, yeah, it was 28-23. And it was the third quarter. No, the first half was a mess because there's, I think, rain and inclement weather. Then it ended up being... Boise scored 21 in the row to go up 21-3. So that's what it was. That third quarter is where Broncos pulled away. And I don't know, because every time, like, Rams, like, this is our year, we're going to beat them. Rams have never, besides this past year, have never been close to beating Boise State ever. And this is probably their best chance to do so. They get them at home. They get them at their new stadium. They are favored to win this game when you look at, FPI gives the Rams a 54% chance to win. Bill Connolly gives Boise a 52% chance to win. And if you recall, my stupid upset early pick for a conference champion was Colorado State last year, or back in January.
I like Colorado State in this game. I'm just going to come out and say it.
So we hate Boise State this year?
Come on, let's not go that far.
I'm kidding. I will say, I'll give them a victory now for CSU, because their second half was amazing. Assuming Nick Stevens did what he did last second half, they have talent. My phone's going crazy. Sorry. They have, like, the best running back group in the conference. They have Nick Stevens is, in my opinion, as good as Brett Rippon or Josh Allen production-wise in the Mountain West. They return one of the best receivers of Michael Gallup Sr. Like I said, running backs, they bring back a couple. And Izzy Dawkins, or Dalen Dawkins, Izzy Matthews. And then even the towards ACL last year, he may be back some point this year in Marvin Kinsey. They do lose Kevin Davis, but every other starter is basically back, has at least one career start. So give me the Rams and Mike Bobo with the victory for the first time ever in the Mountain West over Boise State.
All right,
Air Force. Boise has to snap their losing streak, right?
Do they?
I like how you question it. Do they have to? I think so.
Okay, so this is my stupid upset pick then, because I have Air Force winning this game again.
You do. I do like Arian Werthmann as the quarterback, and even though Air Force loses a ton of talent, they're still going to be a team where they're going to be fine what they do offensively. I just think they can't keep up on the defensive side of the ball. Lose Weston Stillhammer, Ryan Watson. They lose a lot of players on this team. They do have Tim McVay on offense, which is a pretty big deal. And Air Force was 6-0 with Werthmann when he played last year. I just think the defense losses. I know this is the end of the season, Is this their final game, correct? No, not yet. It's game 11 of 12. We'll know who they are, but I don't think Air Force can get them this year because defense.
See, personally, I feel like even if the defense isn't quite as good as it was last year, the fact that the Falcons are losing so much at key positions, if it were any other team, I feel like it would be more of a big deal than it is for a place like the service academies, where they're always losing tons of guys every year. So even if the guys that are stepping in for guys like Steelhammer and, you know, Brody Hicks and Ladipo in the secondary aren't quite as efficient with forcing turnovers, if there's still a bend but don't break defense, the offense is still good enough to drop 40 on just about anybody in a given week. And given, you know, Boise State's struggles in the last few years against the triple option, you know, if Werthmann is as good as advertised, which I'm optimistic about at the moment, I feel like that's the recipe for an upset.
I think that's a possibility as well, because I know they always lose players, but I think they're losing extraordinarily more than normal. But again, it's week 12. Everybody's played. You have experience. You're not fooling anybody at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to say Boise's going to win, because not just the numbers, but 84% from FPI, 92 from Bill Connolly. So Boise with the victory. And then can I just say versus Fresno W and we're done with the show. See you next time.
Yeah, we can go ahead and do that.
Any chance for Fresno real quick? Anything you optimistic about? It is the final game of the year, so Chase and Virgil may have that experience under his belt to sling it for 250 and run for another 85.
That assumes they can keep him on his feet.
Oh, yeah, got to be upright to make some plays, right?
Yeah. We'll just leave it at that. I feel like Boise's going to win that one pretty handily.
Yeah, it's a just because I mentioned every time. So this is interesting. Boise's given a not as good chance to beat Fresno on the road compared to beating Air Force at home.
That's weird math. I don't know. I don't understand how that worked out.
Home road? I don't know. I think part of it is with these advanced numbers, because Air Force is ranked 116 in the S&P Plus. They weigh heavily on production returning. And if you're losing, I believe, 9 starters on defense, that's going to ding you quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
All right, that makes sense.
So that's our Boise State preview. These shows are probably going to be 90 minutes. I'll just tell you now. They're probably going to be 90 minutes.
85 minutes in, we'll tell you that it's going to be 90 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. If you made it this far, please put the number 7 in the comments or tweet us with number 7. I don't know why I made that up, just because. So if you go that far, give us a comment or tweet or Facebook message of 7. And so what was your projection? I have Boise State going 10-2.
I have them at 9-3.
So I think we both had Aztecs loss, Colorado State loss, and you had Air Force loss, right?
Yeah.
Let's do one quick thing, super quick, because I know we're running long here. What's their best case scenario? Is it what we always say, undefeated is best case?
Yeah, I mean, they were this close to being undefeated last year, and if things break their way in a way that it didn't last year, it's well within the realm of possibility, because remember, you know, aside from the loss to Baylor in the bowl game, like, you know, they lost, you know, by one touchdown to Air Force, if I'm not mistaken, and who was their other one? I think they lost, like, both of their games by one score, right?
Yeah, I should have that in front of me. That'd be a nice first step. I know it was the Air Force because there was that fumble or run play they tried to do and lost the ball. The other loss was Wyoming. Yeah, the safety dance. Come on, 30-28.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I closed the tab. So
yeah, one but of yeah, your 20 so tabs I'm, you had open.
Yeah. So, you know, the narrative in the last couple of years, like I said at the very beginning, could be very different if not for a handful of plays. And so I feel like when you're talking about the floor versus the ceiling of this team, it's probably more the same. Like, if the young guys can step up and be, you know, 80% as productive as the guys that they're replacing, like Spurbeck and McNichols and stuff like that, you know, this team has more than enough weapons on offense to make up for whatever questions they might have on defense. And if the defense can force a few more turnovers...
There you go, right?
Yeah.
All right, that's our preview for Boise State, our first of 12. We'll have all, yes, we will preview all 12 teams. Let us know, tweet at us, Facebook message us. Who do you want to hear from us, or what team do you want to hear us blabber about for 90 minutes next? You have 11 options, and quite frankly, I'm disappointed in the turnout for voting today. Saying it right now. More voting, please. To choose who we want to have.
Step it up.
We had a lot of write-ins for Wyoming, and people are also like, hey, why is Fresno on the list? Well, a lot of people want to go worst from first, so that's why they're in there for our most recent poll. But check us out on Facebook, Mountain West Connection, mwcconnection.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube. Give us a review, blogtalkradio.com. Like I said at the beginning, tell one friend and maybe another friend as well. We want to grow the listenership into the hundreds of thousands.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be amazing. Actually, we'd like to consistently get a good number of people to listen to. I'm not giving away all our secrets of how many people listen to us, but we would like to double that number soon. That would be nice. I think that's a reasonable goal. It's the off season. We made it. We're getting closer to making it, I say. Any final thoughts, Matt? Are we good to wrap this 90-minute show up here?
I think we are good to go.
All right. And as always, yeah, we're biased against your team, folks.